I'm your host, Dr. TJ, and with me, as always, is Erin.
Hi.
That was fast.
Yep.
She was right. She's ready to go.
Ready to go. We got a lot to get through today.
We do have a lot to get through today. So today on the show, we did a brain show just recently, and we had some pretty positive response and a lot of questions.
Well, I say, positive and negative, because some people are like, tell us exactly what to do. Like, you know, you told us to not eat the standard American diet, but what exactly are we supposed to be focusing on? And so that's what we're going to get into today.
Yeah, I'll throw out there what your conventional doctor tells you. Just eat healthy.
Right. And I get it, because I get the frustration with a lot of people who are like, you didn't give us, you're telling us what not to eat. What should we be eating? Like, what should we be focusing on? And, we say all the time, you know, whole food diet is best, organic, as much as possible. But there are some, you know, foods that we know are really great for brain function.
Right.
So we're going to go over those so you can kind of, you know, take notes if you want to.
Now, remember, we're going to preface this show with we always believe that you need to have food sensitivity testing to figure out if you should actually be eating a food or not.
Right. And we always give that caveat, but it's hard for us because we see so much information out there that, like, this is what you need to be eating. And we're like, if that is good for you. I mean, if you don't know, then you could add some of these things in and feel a million times worse, right? Because your body will start reacting
And then be convinced that it's not the food because we told you that it's a good food for you to eat.
Right. So you just keep eating it and you keep, you know, trying to change other things when actually it's the food that you added in for brain function that could be causing worse brain function because you have a sensitivity to it. So, you know, like we've always said before, food sensitivities are like having the rule book for your life and your health. It's like it should be the baseline before you start doing anything else to improve your health is, you know, okay, what are the rules for me, first of all? Like, what things are good, what things are bad, because otherwise you're just guessing. And, you know, you don't have any way of knowing what is going to have a positive or negative impact. Especially since you can have reactions up to like 72 hours afterwards. So
at least 72 hours.
So it's not something, so many people preach elimination diets. And I mean, that's great if you can't, you know, come in to get a food sensitivity test. I mean, it's as good as you're going to get, but it doesn't, how many different foods are you eating in 72 hours? It's impossible to know what is actually causing any sort of reaction.
And especially if you started out with a food that already was creating a reaction and you were just adding to it the whole time.
Right. And I think I've said that because before I had a food sensitivity test, I tried an elimination diet. That was the first thing that I had done. And one of the basics that I kept throughout my diet was rice, because so many, you know, I mean, it's very rare to have like a sensitivity to rice. Well, I did. So the elimination diet, I mean, now I know that's why it didn't make any sense to me. I felt horrible the entire time. And it was hard to see if I was having a reaction to the other foods because I was the basis of my diet, you know, was something that I was not supposed to have.
Yeah, exactly. So with all that being said, we'll start rattling off a few things that can benefit brain function. The first one on the list is berries. So people ask me all the time. I'm not a huge fruit fan. I don't think people should be consuming lots and lots of fruit, and people give me a hard time about that. But fruit is nature's candy, and it can create health problems too. And a lot of people, once they, you know, eliminate refined sugars from their diet, they'll lean on fruit as their sugar source. And so I frown upon fruit, but, you know, as far as brain function goes.
I mean, but treat it as candy, right? I mean, it should be a treat. You know, and I know we certainly do that, you know, with our son when we're choosing. I mean, because we hear that a lot with kids. They'll eat, you know, they don't eat vegetables or they don't eat meat, but they'll eat fruit. And it's like, well, it's not the same. You know, I mean,
fruit will still give you the diabetes.
Right. I mean, fruit is great as a treat, but there are some real benefits to the brain by eating berries specifically.
Yeah, berries specifically. So blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, even cherries. So that what happens with berries is they help because they have these compounds called polyphenols. And these polyphenols cross the blood-brain barrier, they get into the brain, and they accumulate in specific regions of the brain that are important for learning and memory. Once they get in there, they even help combat oxidative stress so they can put some fire out, and they help decrease neuroinflammation or brain inflammation. And that's why berries are so beneficial for brain health. And berries promote the growth of good gut bacteria. And so that's very important. And then there's even some research out there that shows that berries contain have neuroprotective properties within them, which, you know, it kind of makes sense with the polyphenol content and things that are going on in there, that of course they would have some of that benefit. So that's berries. I'm a fan of berries. I mean, I enjoy a good strawberry and raspberry.
Right. It is important, especially with berries, to be getting them organic if at all possible.
Yes.
They're porous. So the, you know, any sort of pesticides or herbicides used are going to soak into the berries more than, you know, other fruits and vegetables. So it's especially important to get organic. But remember, frozen is a great option. It's typically cheaper. I know Costco has, you know, really inexpensive frozen organic berries. So that's a good option.
Yeah.
For you, because berries also, especially when they're organic, will go bad quickly. So we hear that a lot. So there's no problem with frozen. So it's a great option.
Sure. Next on the list is fiber, dietary fiber. So many people in this country don't even come close to getting enough fiber in the day. And fiber helps because it helps, especially like prebiotic fiber. It helps boost cognition, right? So there are trials out there that show that prebiotic fiber improves synaptic plasticity, and synapses are how a neuron connects to another neuron. It improves learning, it improves memory, and it improves in executive function, decision making, and things like that. So it improves things like neurotrophic factors, BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It helps to modulate the gut-brain axis, so it doesn't let either the gut or the brain be too far out of control. And it helps to maintain healthy blood glucose levels, and it maintains our insulin sensitivity. We do not want to become insulin resistant. That's where we start having problems when we become resistant to insulin. That's type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance. So where do you get prebiotic fiber? There are some foods that have lots of prebiotic fiber in them, things like onions, garlic, leeks, asparagus, bananas, chicory root. Chicory root's in a lot of like the supplements that say prebiotic fiber. It's most of the time it's chicory root. I'm warning you about chicory root. Some people, it upsets their stomach to consume a lot of chicory root. So just be aware. Don't go out and say, okay, well, I get 5 grams of fiber, I'm going to get to 30 tomorrow. You could have an upset belly if you do that to yourself. But artichoke is another one. And lastly, gluten-free oats. Oats are inherently gluten-free. The problem is they're not gluten-free. They're not all gluten-free because they run the oats through the same machine that they just ran the wheat through. And that's how you end up with gluten contamination
in
oats.
Yes, and be very careful with oats, because I know that Quaker and Bob's Red Mill are two that have been found to have glyphosate in them.
Yeah, and I believe those companies are making steps to decrease that glyphosate.
Absolutely. But you can get, and I can't think of any of the brands off the top of my head. We're not huge, you know, oat eaters in our house, though we're, you know, not against oats. But there are packages that actually say glyphosate free, because you can find that.
Yeah. Typically it's a little green symbol.
Yeah. And so that's an important thing.
All of them are little green symbols. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Everything.
I actually thought the glyphosate one was orange. So,
maybe it is orange. I don't know.
So I don't.
It's orange.
But it'll say glyphosate free. So, and the other thing I wanted to mention with fiber is stay away from there. I mean, you know, TJ started this section by saying, you know, people aren't getting enough fiber. You know, in this country, we don't eat enough fiber. Companies know that. So you will see commercials. I see them all the time of all of these companies that are like these like fiber breakfast cookies and fiber, like all of these different things. Stay away from those things. That's not a good way to get your fiber. It is a gimmick. A lot of them are high in sugar and or they're not good forms of fiber. They're just not. So, you know, look for professional grade supplements if you're going to supplement or otherwise get it through foods like we just listed.
Yeah. So next on the list would be green leafy vegetables. So you really can't get enough of these things. There's a lot of research out there on green leafy vegetables. There are a lot of nutrients in there, folate, phylloquinolone, lutein. They all help protect against cognitive impairment by the same principles, the same mechanisms. They decrease oxidative stress. They decrease neuroinflammation. And these things enhance mitochondrial function. And mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell. These are the things that actually manufacture energy. It's how we make energy from our food. So get as many servings per day in of green leafies that you can. We always try to shoot for 3 to 5. Things like, I don't know, spinach, Swiss chard, collard greens, lettuce, things like that. Stay away from iceberg.
I was just going to say. Another thing, because green leafy vegetables, too, are ones that, especially if you're buying them organic, they, you know, Swiss chard is a little better, some of those, but especially the really leafy ones don't stay good as long. We have a habit in our house, you know, you can get organic frozen spinach and throw it in just about anything. So that's a really easy way to boost your intake of green leafy vegetables and do it really inexpensively. So,
yeah. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about different foods that you can consume to optimize brain function. If you're just tuning in today, we're talking about foods to optimize brain function. So before the break, we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about, I say a lot of stuff. We talked
about
three things. Erin got on her soapbox and, you know, we just lost the whole first segment. But we talked about berries, we talked about fiber, and we talked about some green leafy vegetables. Next thing we'll throw out there is consumption of nuts. So there is a lot of studies available for you, or there are a lot of studies out there available for you that demonstrate the relationship between, you know, nut intake and cognitive function. And the more nuts a person eats, the better function or the better cognition they have in old age. It helps brainwave functions that are very specific to learning and memory. And they also help with insulin sensitivity. They help with endothelial function. And the endothelium is the inside, the innermost layer of blood vessels, which is the most fragile layer that gets damaged when we have any kind of cardiovascular disease. And they help reduce inflammation. So walnuts in particular are the ones that we'll talk about now. They have been focused on with quite a bit of research because they are very high in alpha-linolenic acid, which is very positively associated with brain function. And what's crazy is, and what I think a lot of people don't realize, is that you don't actually have to eat a lot of them to get the benefits. A handful a day. Like literally a handful. And I'm not talking about, you know, stick your hand down in the can of walnuts and, you know, whatever you can scoop out with your hand. I'm talking about reaching your hand in palm down, grabbing some and lifting up with the palm staying down and what you can keep a hold of. That's not a lot for most people. They can't you can't hold that many in your hand. That's all it takes to get the neuroprotective and the memory boosting effects that come with walnut consumption. So it's an easy thing to implement and put in your diet. Of course, you know, if you have a tree nut sensitivity or allergy, by all means, stay away from them then, because you don't want to have any issues there. But that's a it's a great alternative. It's something that's easy. It's portable. You can they're on the go. A lot of companies that are manufacturing nuts, they put them in convenient to go packaging, so you can just take them with you wherever you are.
Right. But you know, like TJ said, it's again one we see a lot of sensitivities to nuts.
Yeah.
So it's really important to make sure that you don't have a sensitivity before you go, you know, eating, you know, really adding these into your diet.
Right. Another food that can have good cognitive benefits is dark chocolate.
So, yay! This is my favorite one.
So there's flavonoids in dark chocolate that help improve cognitive performance in people that have memory impairment and people that don't. So it's beneficial for everyone, right? So it helps how we process things. It helps our processing speed. It helps with executive functioning. It helps with our working memory and our verbal fluency. And again, same type of principles. These flavonoids improve performance by increasing this BDNF or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. They enhance cerebrovascular blood flow, so blood flow to the brain itself, and they help with insulin. It helps with insulin sensitivity, and it only takes 1 to 2 ounces a day. I was waiting on Aaron to say, "Oh, boo! Needed to be 15 ounces a day. You got to have a pound of chocolate."
I don't need a lot of chocolate. I just like that.
Most people don't, but you know. Then we have our chocoholics out there that eat a, you know, pound and a half
a
day.
Honestly, I know you know this. The two biggest things that I can think of that people say when we recommend, you know, food sensitivity test are, I hope chocolate isn't on it. I hope coffee isn't on it.
Yeah.
Like those are, in my opinion, that's what we get the most of. Because when people, I know there are a lot of, you know, big coffee drinkers out there, but chocolate is one of those things that most of the people are like, I don't need a lot. I just would hate to think that I can't ever have it.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're picking out your dark chocolate, it needs to be 70 or 75% cocoa content needs to be 70-75%. I don't remember right off the top of my head where the threshold is for dark, but a lot of people that get into dark chocolate, once you start eating it, they want it darker and darker. That's just part of it. And you want to choose non-alkalized or a natural dark chocolate to maximize the flavonoids that are in there. Next on the list is one of my favorites. It's eggs. I like eggs. We make eggs. Lincoln eats eggs. He'll eat an egg, I don't know, 2 or 3 mornings out of the week, he'll have an egg.
I love eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eggs are very, very good for us. We had a time, where there was a lot of misinformation out there that, you know, is basically blaming cholesterol. Oh, eggs have cholesterol in them. Well, good Lord. The thing is, they also have the components in them, choline and lecithin, to help you break down fats and cholesterol. So, you know, that's not actually accurate. And basically the whole diet lipid hypothesis of, you know, cholesterol in your diet, raises blood cholesterol. That's all basically been disproven. And now there's research out that's showing the beneficial effects of eggs on brain health. And that's, you know, that's where we want to stay and live. And so eating eggs early in life improves biomarkers for infant brain development, i.e. why we give our son eggs. I cook him in ghee, so he's getting fat and the eggs all at the same time. They have, like I said before, they have choline in them, but there's also eggs also contain DHA, which is very crucial for brain development and proper brain development. But eggs also contain lutein, which plays a very important role in neurologic development as well. So that's a fantastic food to help with cognitive function and, you know, brain development in kids.
It's know I keep saying this, but I mean, eggs is another one that we see a lot of sensitivities
to. There are tons.
So, I mean, you have to make sure that you don't have a sensitivity to eggs, because it is one that is common food sensitivity. And you have a sensitivity to it, it is not a good food for you, period.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's only good if you don't have a sensitivity. And since it is so common, this is one you really want to make sure you get checked out before you add it in, because we've seen a lot of people who, you know, they come back with eggs and you're like, that's all I eat for breakfast. I eat eggs for breakfast every morning. And we're like, yeah, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, I mean, they're like, but I thought eggs are good for you. Yeah. Same thing with leafy vegetables and nuts. You know, these other things we're talking about, they're good for you unless they're not specifically for you.
Right.
So, yeah. Eggs is just one that, you know, we do see a lot of sensitivity. So I wanted to point that out.
One of my really good friends, she came in and was had some health issues that she wanted to deal with. And one of her complaints that was just bothersome was the fact that she had heartburn every day. I'm like, well, it's something that you're eating that's creating the problem. And sure enough, we got our results back and eggs were super high sensitivity. And she was, you know, literally asked the question, just like Aaron, what in the world am I going to eat? I eat eggs every single day for breakfast. And she called me up one day, I don't know, a week or so later. She's like, I stopped eating eggs. And on the third day, I stopped having heartburn, and I haven't had heartburn since.
Right.
Eggs were the reason. She hadn't really changed a whole lot other things. She was going to slowly implement some stuff, because it's hard implementing food sensitivities.
Right. Plus,
I get
we
that.
Always say, we get it. If you've got, you know, a lot of food in your house,
don't throw it away.
Don't throw it away. You know, go ahead and use it. And just as you get, you know, as you purchase more food, purchase food that is, you know, okay for you.
Right. And so it's true. So with eggs, be cautious.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people, we hear this a lot, you know, we should not be eating cereal for breakfast. You know, like, cereal is bad. Milk is bad. Like, so people will move to eggs. But if you haven't had your food sensitivity test, you know, done, then you may actually feel worse on, you know, with eggs, even though if everything, you know, in a perfect world, eggs would be a huge improvement from cereal.
Right. Next on the list would be coffee. And I know a lot of you are out there. I can hear the woohoos and the claps and the joyous singing. Coffee does improve cognitive performance. I mean, it does. There are a lot of people that have food sensitivities to coffee, just throwing that out there. The big ingredient that helps with cognitive performance is caffeine. Caffeine is actually helps athletic performance too. And so athletes are limited by the amount of caffeine that they can have in their system. If they break a record and have to get tested, they're looking for caffeine levels to make sure that they don't have high levels of caffeine in their system. And so, you know, it really does have an impact. So what caffeine does is it enhances hippocampal transmission and memory consolidation. So it's a very powerful tool to improve cognitive performance. But decaffeinated coffee also helps with alertness, suggesting that it's the coffee that has the cognitive enhancing effect beyond just what caffeine is in there. And that's what I think is actually very impressive from, you know, a nerd standpoint looking at this research, that, you know, we once thought it was the caffeine the whole time in coffee that was creating this benefit, but it may not actually be the caffeine. It may be the actual coffee itself without the caffeine, because we're seeing very similar benefits. So, all right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some foods that can improve cognition, and then we'll breeze through some nutrients that are important for cognitive function as well. Today we have been talking about foods to improve brain function, and we listed off a few. What all have we talked about? We started with berries, and then we listed off prebiotic fiber, some green leafy vegetables, nuts, dark chocolate, and eggs. And then if we finished up with coffee. Next on the list is tea. So a lot of people that don't drink coffee will drink tea. There are cognitive benefits to drinking tea, either green or black tea. There are one of the big compounds that's in that NT that helps with cognition is theanine. Theanine it helps with very similar properties as the rest of things. It improves alertness. It helps with performance on long duration tasks. It promotes relaxation and being calm, but it helps us balance to create this focus. So it allows us to deal with very demanding types of tasks, and you know it's actually very interesting how theanine works. It will really truly calm you and focus you and allow people to get more work done. As a little trick that we tell college kids, you know, when you're going through finals, putting some theanine into your coffee or your tea can really help, because you can supplement with theanine and add a little bit in. Works great. So those are some foods. Let's talk about some nutrients for a little while. Some very specific nutrients that can help with brain function. I'm a nutrient person. I love nutrition. I love all that stuff. One of the first ones a lot of these are B vitamins we're going to talk about. But B1 or thiamine. So in animal studies, mice exposed to threats from predators, basically they suppress brain cell growth. And maybe they're conserving energy while they're under stress, but when they're given B1, that response goes away. Now, what's interesting about B1, so if you consume alcohol inhibits your body's ability to absorb B1 or thiamine from your food. So if you're having alcohol with lunch and having alcohol with dinner, you are really setting yourself up to be thiamine deficient. And thiamine is extremely important for brain function, right? When you have a thiamine deficiency, that's associated with dementia. And when you supplement with thiamine and you add it back, it reverses cognitive dysfunction. It reverses brain pathology that we see in people that have Alzheimer's disease, right? So it's a very powerful nutrient, very important for people that have cognitive decline or want to prevent cognitive decline. Another one is vitamin B6. Vitamin B6. Oh wait, I wanted to talk about food sources.
Right,
B1. So some food sources: rice, white and brown rice. Pork has B1 in it. Trout, which is a type of fish, black beans, mussels, tuna, acorn squash, beef, yogurt, milk. If you consume dairy,
I'm not a huge fan of dairy.
Yeah,
so
I'm not a big fan of dairy.
It's not worth it for a thiamine.
No, you better take a supplement. I'll get you some thiamine.
And be careful with tuna as well. I mean, I know we've talked about that before, but yeah. You know, you don't want to be consuming a ton of tuna, but in small doses, it is a good source.
So vitamin B6, really important, because vitamin B6 is involved in the metabolism of this substance called homocysteine. Homocysteine is like sandpaper that goes through your arteries and veins. We make it naturally, and very high levels can create some vascular inflammation and lead to all kinds of cognitive dysfunction, cognitive decline, dementia, Alzheimer's disease, et cetera, when it's up. And B6 can help to lower those homocysteine levels. B6 is very important for making various neurotransmitters. Making sure that we have enough B6 in our diet or from supplementation is extremely important. If you're trying to get improved diet, dietary sources of B6, you would consume things like fish and chicken or turkey and dark green leafy vegetables, or dark lean greasy vegetables, however I was saying that a second ago when I couldn't get the words out. And legumes. Legumes also contain B6. One of my favorite nutrients is vitamin B12. It's mind-boggling, really and truly, how many people are deficient in vitamin B12.
And it's so important. B12 is so important.
You have to have it for functioning. Every single cell in the body needs vitamin B12. And it's extremely important for brain function. It's just insane.
We have so many people who come in for B12 shots regularly because, I mean, the difference that they can tell and how they feel is huge. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, so many people are now, you know, huge advocates of B12 shots, because it's a great way to get your B12 in, and it makes such a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, B12 is, it's so important.
And it's a really cheap shot too.
It is. It's super cheap. It's easy to do. It plays a role in brain function. It plays a role in homocysteine metabolism, that stuff I was just talking about. Neurogenesis, or the making of neurons, how our neurotransmission, how our neurons communicate with each other, producing the myelin sheath, which is this covering that goes around and insulates our nerves. And when we don't have enough B12, we see things like nerve damage, things like memory loss. And there's, just pick a cognitive problem, a brain problem, and B12 can play a role in that. So we want to make sure that we get B12. The really important thing to know about B12 is that it's only found in animal products. So it's ridiculously common in our vegan, vegetarian individuals that they don't have enough B12. So if for some reason you don't eat meat, you've got to be supplementing with B12. You've got to get B12 in the system.
Yeah, it's definitely not impossible, because, you know, it's not that we have never seen someone who's vegan or vegetarian. And, you know, if they take B12 seriously and they're really diligent about it, but it's just, it's extremely common. I mean, the vast, vast majority of people who are vegan or vegetarian are B12 deficient.
Yes. Next on the list would be folate. So folate is extremely important, and I'm gonna spend just a little bit of time on folate, because folate works with B12 to help with this homocysteine metabolism. It helps with this process called methylation. And for those of you that are really into health, I'm sure you've heard the word methylation before.
We get a lot of questions about, do you know about methylation?
Yes, like, tons. Yes, we know about methylation. So folate decreases the stability of our DNA. If we have a folate deficiency, it impairs our neurons' ability to differentiate and repair themselves. It causes areas of the brain to atrophy or get smaller, and it specifically happens in the hippocampus, which is an area of the brain that's involved in memory and learning. And so we want to make sure that doesn't happen. So folate is also needed to synthesize this substance called biopterin. Biopterin is this cofactor that we use to make neurotransmitters. Biopterin is the cycle that we go through. This is part of methylation. I have to teach this to everyone when they're like trying to understand methylation. Biopterin is the step right before folate, and biopterin is how we manufacture dopamine and serotonin from tyrosine and tryptophan. So tyrosine and tryptophan run through this biopterin cycle, this coenzyme, this cofactor, to manufacture these neurotransmitters. And it doesn't work in a lot of individuals. So, you know, where do we get folate? Dark green leafy vegetables. And another thing, folate is extremely important for women. It's important for the neural tube when we are developing embryologically. We've got to make sure that we have enough folate.
Folate, not folic acid.
Yes, folate, not folic acid. Thank you for pointing that out. And if you're going to supplement with folate, make sure it's the methylated form, methylfolate or L5-methylfolate or tetrahydrofolate. There's a lot of different forms of folate. Stay away from folic acid. That is not what you want.
Right. And if you have questions about supplements, well, supplements in general, but, you know, folate specifically, find a functional medicine practitioner. Even if you don't go in for a full appointment to have a full workup, they can point you in the right direction as far as those types of supplements and get you professional grade supplements that are going to work a lot better.
Yes. All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up with three or four more nutrients that can help with brain function. And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in to today's show, you've missed a really good show talking about various nutrients that can optimize brain function and cognitive function. And we want to finish out. We've got, I don't know, three or four more that I would like to talk about before we run out of time today. So the next one on the list is choline. And I mentioned choline when we were talking about eggs What segment were we talking about eggs? Do you remember? Mm-hmm. First one, maybe?
Yeah, I think we went on eggs on the first one, maybe second.
And so choline is a component of eggs, but it's overlooked a lot. It's very important for cognitive health. Choline is a component of cell walls. And so when it helps to insulate neurons for cognitive function. And so when we don't have enough choline, our nerves can't communicate with each other. They don't transmit information very well, which causes impaired cognition. So when we have enough choline, even high choline intake during pregnancy promotes better cognition in offspring. So mamas, you want to make sure that you're getting plenty of choline every day. Big sources of choline would be things like beef liver, eggs, red meat, and chicken. Cruciferous vegetables can be a pretty good source of choline. A cup of cooked broccoli, and or a cup of collard greens has 60 to 70 milligrams of choline in them. Yes, supplementation is definitely going to have choline in it. A lot of times, your liquid liposomal forms of supplements, things like liposomal vitamin C or liposomal glutathione, they're going to have a pretty high concentration of choline in them because they will have things like phosphatidylcholine in them. And that'll help you get your increased levels of choline while giving yourself glutathione or vitamin C or curcumin or whatever other liposomal form you're taking. So a very good way to do that. Another one on the list is DHA. DHA is one of our fatty acids. It's a component. It makes up 90% of the omega-3 fatty acids found in the brain, right? So most people are familiar with EPA and DHA. We're talking about DHA in particular. 90% of it's found in the brain. So DHA modulates how we release neurotransmitters. It modulates how we manufacture nerve cells. It modulates how we myelinate or put the insulating sheath around our nerves. It helps with our membranes and how they function well. It keeps neuroinflammation down. And it helps us with proper gene function in the brain. So it's extremely, extremely important. And there are researchers out there that believe that DHA was the factor that is responsible for the increase in brain size in humans or our hominid ancestors millions of years ago. Now, who knows if that's actually true or not, or I don't know, but there's researchers that are convinced that it was DHA that did that. And so the importance of DHA starts early in life. I mean, we give our son DHA supplements right now because it improves brain development and brain function. And it's very important for kids up, all the way through, but it's really important before age 5 to load them up with as much DHA because it improves memory and decreases cognitive decline. I recommend people to really increase DHA. There are supplements out there, oil supplements, fish oil supplements that you can get that have high DHA. They're made specifically for children and pregnant women to improve DHA consumption. So I really encourage taking as much of that as possible. Next on the list will be iron. So iron deficiency is also rampant. We have tons and tons of patients who do not have anywhere near enough iron. Iron is extremely important for maintaining proper cognition. Now, what's crazy? Go ahead. You were going to say something.
Well, and this might be where you're going next, but it's just scary to say that because we can't have too much iron.
That is where I was going. Oh. That's okay.
Well, I just want to put that caveat out there because, yeah, we, any time that we talk, I mean, it's the same thing when we talk about vitamin D and we say, our brain's deficient. And so you just then think, okay, we don't want everyone going out and just completely overloading themselves. So that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yeah. So exactly. And you don't want too much iron. You don't want to be empty. You don't want to be too full. Because iron creates a lot of metabolic problems when we have high levels in the body. It basically creates this stuff called, I refer to it as metabolic rusting. Just like iron sitting out in the elements will rust very quickly, too much iron in the body causes rusting too. It creates this inflammatory response that just creates issues. So to get iron, animal products have the highest bioavailability from food. There are plant foods that contain iron, but they also have phytochemicals that can stop you from absorbing iron as well. So you gotta keep that in mind. A lot of times when we have iron deficiency, if someone doesn't want to consume things like liver or animal products to get their iron, I will just have them take a supplement. It's just way easier to take an absorbable form of iron that's a supplement. And like an iron oxide is not what you're looking for. Last on the list, or last thing that we're going to talk about, because we are running out of time today, is vitamin D. Vitamin D is extremely important. It's important for bone health. It's important for brain health. Low vitamin D is very intimately linked with poor cognition. Having enough vitamin D helps us have cognitive function. Now, we will, again, just like Aaron talked about with the caveat with vitamin or with iron, you can have too much vitamin D. There are levels that you can be getting too much vitamin D. So we have to be careful. Vitamin D is one of those that I really encourage people to consistently test your vitamin D levels. When we're working with someone with vitamin D, we're checking their vitamin D every 3 months until we know that they're stabilized with their supplement, with whatever they're taking, and whatever their needs are, however their diet is going. We are looking constantly at vitamin D because we don't want them to become too high and we don't want them to get too low, because we know that the health benefits of vitamin D are much higher than the lower limit for medical range as far as vitamin D goes. You need much more than that. So where can you get diet vitamin D in foods? Cod liver oil has a lot of vitamin D. Wild-caught salmon, wild-caught mackerel, egg yolks have, especially if they're pastured, egg yolks have a lot of vitamin D in them as well. And lard from pastured pigs. I'm a big lard fan.
Also, make sure if you're taking a vitamin D supplement that's appropriate form, you want vitamin D3, not vitamin D2. If you're getting prescription strength vitamin D, a lot of times it is vitamin D2. It is the wrong form. It will not do you any good.
Yes.
Again, like I've mentioned before, see a functional medicine practitioner who can help point you in the right direction to make sure you're getting professional grade supplements that will make a much bigger difference than getting anything off the shelf.
Sure. And that's about all the time we've got for today. So if you want more information, please visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Call us, 314-293-8123. Find us on our socials, Instagram, Facebook, etc. Like our podcast, subscribe, shoot us an email. We love to hear from you. That's all the time we've got for today. So for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness One. Thanks for listening.